There is nothing worse than untapped potential. If you know that you're made for more, this is the place. I know that every successful person I've ever met has one thing in common. They do not let themselves fall victim to their circumstances. They figure out a way to rise above it. So join me on this journey where I help you to be better, do better, and have better in life and in business. If you're feeling stuck and you're needing some practical tools, some hope to get you to that better life, this is definitely the place for you. Everyone, welcome to the Unstuck Podcast. I'm Lachelle Weamy, and I get a chance to have an amazing, enlightening conversation with my new friend, Helen Blukiger. And I hope that I said that correctly because people get my name wrong all the time. So Blukiger, yes?
That was perfect. Yay.
All right. So Helen is an author, you guys. He's written 15 books up to this point, and he does all kinds of things, and he's going to be somebody that's going to really enlighten us on a whole host of things that might be making us feel stuck, but more importantly, giving us the tools that we need to get from where we are to where we want to be. So, Helen, thank you so much for popping into the show today.
I want, first of all, to honor you for the work that you're doing. There is so much of discouragement, of uncertainty, of negativity, of fault finding and all kinds of other things going on in the world today. A bright face, a beautiful person, and a beautiful soul like you are, bringing hope, encouragement, love, kindness, and joy to this space is good. And I want to honor you for the effort and the labor of love that you're putting into this.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege to be on this journey with everybody who's listening, and I'm glad that you get to be a part of that. So can you do a better job than I did of describing what it is that you do and how you help people in the world?
My goal, I do one thing. People say, well, what is a coach? I'm a coach. Okay. Now I'm not just a coach. I'm a catalyst for personal transformation. And sometimes I say, I am the ultimate catalyst for personal transformation. In a practical way, I give energy, example, encouragement, and permission to those ending addiction to mediocrity, especially those who have massive hardballs from life thrown in the mix, but who refuse to be defined or limited by those things.
I would say you're
my personal goal. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say you're a perfect fit for what we're trying to do here. So I love it.
My personal goal right now is I've chosen to help 10 million people discover, develop, and serve others with their divine gifts, because I know that we as humans are happiest when we love and serve. We're happiest in community. We're happiest when we're doing good. We all are anxious to give and receive love. We love serving each other, but we also fear judgment and rejection. Yeah. And so in that combination means that we sit around a lot, call it stuck, call it whatever we call it. Mm-hmm. But I've chosen to help 10 million people discover, develop, and serve with their divine gifts.
I love that. And what ever got you started on that journey? Take me back to when all of this started and when you personally have ever felt stuck again.
If you knew me 15 years ago, you would not know me. 15 years ago, I was at the conclusion of 30 years. I'm 66, so you can do whatever math you need to. But 15 years ago, I was at the conclusion of 30 years in a career where I had risen rapidly and made a lot of money and was very successful. Big dog, yay, whoop-de-doo. Testified before Congress, held C-suite positions in the United States and Canada, blah, blah, blah. Made a lot of money, and behind the scenes, I was a raging wreck. I had struggled with depression. I hated myself. I lived a completely dual life. I'd been in and out of rehab. I'd struggled with addictions and depression for decades. I'd never gone to get anyone. So I was stuck in a loop of self-sabotage. I would create staggering success on a world scale. In the industry I was in, I was a one-name guy. People knew who Kellen was. But I was a miserable wreck behind the scenes, and I was stuck in that loop, believing that I didn't deserve to have what I had, consequently sabotaging it, not daring to talk to anyone, and not knowing how to get out of that mess. So that was me 14 years ago. And today, I've left that industry. I don't do that anymore. I wasn't an author then. I've written 15 books. I have 7 more underway. I have coaching clients around the world, and I'm committed to helping everybody I can breathe on discover who they really are and live into that truth.
I think that there's something so powerful. I remember you telling me when we first met about the addiction part of your story, and how you said that it was an impressive amount of money that you were spending towards that, which gave me this really amazing sense of just how successful you were in the world standard. I have air quotes for people who can't see me, where literally from the outside, everything looks like you had everything that anybody could ever dream of.
But I had a guy in the neighborhood who came by my house and told me he had garage envy. I had 6 cars. I had an 850 horsepower supercar. I had a Hummer H2. I had 2 motorcycles. I had more stuff than I knew what to do with. And I was making enough money and wasting it, but enough money that my $3,000 a week cocaine addiction was lunch money.
Yeah.
And I was a total wreck as a person. But from the outside, put on the 3-piece Armani, go downtown, and let's do battle.
Yeah. And I just think
I was that guy.
That's amazing, because what it's doing is it's giving us some hope and some perspective of the people that are listening to this. And they have been. They've been putting on this show for everybody else, but they're falling apart on the inside. And they're looking around. And I think that sometimes we can have so much shame associated with that, because we're like, why am I not happier in this situation? What's wrong with me? Why can't I be content here? All of the things, and it just makes that cycle even worse. Wouldn't you agree?
Completely. And there's several things. One is we live in a structure that everybody's judging everybody every other minute, and we're all infected with a disease I call WITOT, WITOT, and you need to check yourself 50 times a day to see if you have any WITOT on you. And I'll tell you what it stands for. WITOT is what I think others think. That poison shapes, controls, limits, directs so much of what we say and do. Social media and the visibility that we now have is a catalyst for that disease, because we often compare our own failures with others' highlight reels.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sort of thing gives you this feeling that you just really suck, and if anybody really knew, you know, and so you get paralyzed and shrink up.
Yeah. And we start to, I mean, I've been guilty of trying to create my self-worth from external things, external degrees, external titles, external, you know, salaries, all of the things that make me whole, right? Instead of working on who I am. And I think that that only compounds the imposter syndrome, because I'm recognizing that I'm still trying to make myself whole. And so therefore, if anybody that the higher I ranked at work or whatever, it just made that imposter even worse, because now I'm here, but I'm still this little person inside.
I heard a person who was giving a talk once say, you can never get enough of what you don't need, because what you don't need won't satisfy you. And this whole petting from outside sources, whether it's in the form of a bonus check, big cash, position, possessions, house, and everything else, we don't need those things. We need to be useful. We need to love and be loved. We need to serve. We need those things like we need to breathe.
Yes.
And you can't buy any of those.
Right. And one of the things I think is great is that you said you're an author, and one of the books that you wrote was called The Story Arc. And it was really, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's really how you can take your own story and inspire and serve other people. And I'm just really honored and grateful that you're willing to take your story today, Helen, and help us all be inspired. And so I'm looking forward to taking your journey and your story and bringing out the inspiration and the hope and the practical tools that we need. So I know that the other book that you wrote was called, let's see, I have it written down, The Results Equation. Tell me about what that book is all about.
Well, I was a very successful executive and consultant. I was the guy that got called, and there was billions of dollars and lots of angry people and all that sort of thing to come and fix stuff.
Yeah.
And I was really good at it, but I didn't know how I did it. And later, when I started writing books, after I walked away from the career I was in, and I literally in 2007 had a divine intervention that changed the course of my life. Otherwise, I would have been dead already. And you know, I was a slow motion train wreck and it would have been over by now. But when I started doing this and changing my focus into service and trying to figure out how I could actually serve, I realized that my success was formulaic, and that even though it was in different situations, that the steps from getting from A to B, because that's all any goal is, whether you want to make more money, fix your body, fix a relationship, get happy, get spiritual, get connected to God, it's still you are where you are and you want to be somewhere else. Yeah. Metaphorically or physically. Okay. So I call it getting from dream to done. And I realized that there are five parts to getting from dream to done. And maybe because I was a math major, I don't know, but I wrote it in an equation, you know, this plus that, plus that, plus that, plus that equals results. Yeah. And so the results equation is it's the only process that I've ever seen. It's the reason I wrote it. Same thing with the story arc. I created something, realized it wasn't there, and so I thought, I should write this book. So I did. But it's the only one that deals with, there's lots of books to tell you how to plan and how to set goals and all that. And then there's lots of motivational books. It's the only one that I've seen that helps you both do good, meaningful planning for any goal and deals with the head trash. Yeah. There's a section called mental earthquake, learning to tell the truth, the stuck, unstuck problems at the same time, and how to integrate that with a plain old planning document that fits in your calendar that manages resources and time. So it's the marriage of those two things is what the results equation is. And I teach 90-day classes usually, based on the results equation, and I did it for a long time before I wrote it, that help people in 90-day chunks to get something done. So someone comes to the class, I need this. I'm going to get this done in 90 days. Okay. You know, and I'll put little small classes together, five or six people, and then run them for 90 days and coach the heck out of people to get whatever they set for their goals done using the results equation process.
I love that. So I want to get into the steps of that, but first I want to just ask you about the experience that you had in your story of when you decided that your life needed to change. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
I was invited in a very, very extraordinary, unusual, divine, otherworldly, powerful way, probably because I was so thick-headed. In August of 2007, I came home from work. I was the person that I described, making all that money. I was getting ready to go out party for the weekend. Friday night, I had four teenagers living with me. I have 10 children. Four of them were living with me at the time. I was single again, single dad, a single for the third time, and was getting ready to go binge for, who knows, two, 3 days. And for some reason, on that Friday night, I felt like before I went out, I had to turn on the television. Now, that won't sound like anything, except I didn't know how to turn on the TV. I had the biggest, greatest one you could have installed. I had some people from local, you know, can put all this cool stuff in because you have that when you make all this money, right? Except for I didn't watch TV and I didn't know how to turn it on. So I had to ask one of my kids how to turn it on. And my 16-year-old daughter, she took the remote, turned it on, then threw it at me and stomped out of the room like a 16-year-old might do. And it landed on a program titled Intervention. Now, Intervention, if you don't know, is a reality TV show where family members who are worried about somebody stage an intervention with a shrink and some people. Well, the protagonist in this one was a high-ranking executive with a cocaine problem. And so I watched about 10 minutes and I said, I'm not watching this. Screw this. And I turned it off, stomped around the house for a few more minutes, 10, 15 more minutes, got ready to go out. And I was absolutely compelled to turn the TV back on. So I turned it on again and the program started over in the middle of the hour. And no, I don't have a DVR and no, it wasn't on the schedule and no, it can't do that. But it did and scared me bad enough that I watched it. And it went badly. The guy refused all the help, yelled at his relatives, stomped out, and it ended badly. But it scared me enough that I didn't go out. I went to bed. And when I went to bed, I went to hell. And what I mean by that is the entire panoply. I was raised in an abusive, fanatic, religious home where if you didn't behave a certain way, you got disciplined that today would be felony child abuse. I remember, I don't say that lightly, getting dressed in high school in the locker room, wanting to get dressed last because I didn't want anybody to see I was black and blue, you know, that sort of stuff. So it was awful. And I came away with the feeling I'm not good enough and never will be. So that and my failed marriages and my addictions and everything, all of it played before my eyes in this sort of slow motion train wreck for I didn't know how long. I was focused on all the suffering that I had both endured and inflicted during all my years. And I was 52 at the time. And I had never talked to anyone about depression or anything. So I'd lived this whole thing up and down this roller coaster in silence for my whole life. And finally, I heard a voice and it said, "It is enough." And it wasn't an angry voice. It was just, "It is enough." I woke up and it was Saturday afternoon at 5 o'clock. So I had been somewhere for 18 hours. I got up and realized that I had been invited to change. So, it doesn't get any louder than that. So I threw away $1,000 worth of stuff that I had. And I said, "I got to quit right now." I knew I had to probably leave the career I was in. All of it sort of was this mess. And I didn't know exactly what to do because that got me. And I quit cold turkey, straight up sobriety in one day, never touched it again. But that was just the first half because it didn't do anything about the depression that I had dealt with for 40 years since I was a teenager that I'd never talked to anyone about. And that help came 2 weeks later. 2 weeks later, I had I hadn't resigned the contracts. I had actually didn't have a job. I had a bunch of really lucrative contracts. But in those positions, I made decisions that affected companies for billions of dollars. And I used to get free stuff. Think of a CEO, people give them gifts, free stuff like that, or give her whatever, just to try to curry favor, that kind of stuff. So I used to get all kinds of free stuff. And one of the things I got was a pair of tickets to a Yo-Yo Ma concert. Now, if you know classical music, you know who that is. And if you don't, you don't. But it's like, wow. Okay, so I had these two tickets, but I was single again for the third time, and I didn't want to waste the other ticket. So I said to the groups that I managed, I said, "Is anybody like classical music?" And some lady in one of the groups said, "Well, I do." And I looked at her and I said, "Have I ever given you anything before?" And she said, "No." I said, "Okay, fine, here." They gave me the ticket. "See you there." So we met at the concert. Halfway through, it was electrifying. And I'm stone cold sober now for 2 weeks. This feeling came back over me, and I recognized it from 2 weeks before. And this voice said to me, "You need to marry this woman." And I said, "You're insane." And I argued, "You're crazy. I've screwed that up three times officially, and some other times, not happening." Later that night, we were backstage because, of course, they were backstage passes, and we're meeting all the people and all that stuff. And it came back and said, "And you need to tell her tonight." And I argued furiously because I thought, she had me arrested or whatever. I mean, harassment, come on, And you don't win those arguments. So I did. And it went about like you would have expected. Are you out of your mind? But she didn't go to the cops. She didn't call the cops or have me arrested. 2 weeks later, she'd had her own set of experiences. She resigned her very well-paid, good position. Resigned from all the contracts that I had. We walked off into the sunset together. We just celebrated our 14th anniversary, and her name is Joy. Like, you can't make this stuff up, right? And so that was literally the angel that was sent to help me deal with the depression because she was unflagging in support. Everybody in the office knew I was an addict. They didn't know, but they knew, rumors and stuff. And so I've asked her a million times, "What in the world possessed you? Walk off into the sunset with a drug addict?" And she said, "I don't know. I just knew it was the right thing to do to the core of my soul." So that those two things together gave me the tools, the invitation to get unstuck. Now, I still had to do the work, go to the shrinks and change my mind and learn how to love and learn how to not lie and learn how to be a person and learn how to do all those things. And so that story is your invitation. I don't care what your stuckness is. I don't care what your excuse is. There is help. There is a process. And what I know from writing the results equation and living the successful consulting life, there's always a road from where you are to where you want to be. The only question is, are you willing to walk it? So that's 100%. What happened in 2007 to change my mind, my life.
That is an amazing story. And I didn't know those details, and that it's an amazing, amazing story. And I know you hear that all the time, but thank you for sharing and thank you for your vulnerability. And I just really am excited to hear from you how you were able to take the success steps, the equation that you've talked about, and put them into action, because I know that none of us write books or teach things that we haven't already tested ourselves. And so tell me a little bit about that equation and how you help other people to what kind of steps can people take if they wanted to start something today?
So starting today, the first thing to do right now is decide really and truly in your heart where you've had enough. Like people respond, you, me, we respond to pain. When we put our foot, our fist or something down and say, I've had enough. I've had enough. I'm going to do something different. You may say, I don't know how, or I don't know where the road goes. I don't know what the resources are. But step one is to decide firmly, really, absolute, I'm done. I'm done making excuses. I'm done pretending I don't have time. I'm done putting things in my life above what I know I need to do, want to do, keep telling myself I'll do. So that's the first thing. Make a firm, unalterable decision that you're going to move forward. Number two is then immediately figure out, okay, now that I've said that, I've made a true commitment. What is the first thing I can do? The smallest thing that moves me in the direction of my goal, whether I'm trying to create a new business, launch a product, lose weight, make money. What's one thing I can do right now today? And then do that one thing. And here's why that's important. We get used to lying to ourselves all the time. And that might sound harsh, but we think as long as we keep our commitments to somebody else, we're okay. And we lie our faces off to ourselves. Yeah. We say we're going to do this. We say we're going to do that. Blah, 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 blah. And we don't. And then what we teach ourselves is that we can't be trusted. Right. When you make a firm decision and you say, I'm going to do this, and you do it, you create the cadence of success, which is, I said it, I did it, I said it, I did it, I said it, I did it. And when you keep doing that, even with tiny things, you learn to trust yourself. You learn, I can be trusted. I don't have to hide. I don't have to feel like, well, if people really knew, blah, 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 fill in the blank. I can be trusted. I can do this thing one little bit at a time. If I took 1% more responsibility for my income or my physical shape, what would I do different? 1%. Well, it doesn't take very many days before that adds up to 100. I said it, I did it, I said it, I did it. And if you say it and you fall on your face and you say it and you fall on your face, do two things. One, shrink the goal. Mm-hmm. And two, forgive yourself and get off your butt and recommit.
That's brilliant, because that's what's going to happen. And we take a hit to our self-esteem when we make promises and then break them, just like you said. And we have to take the identity of somebody with integrity and to wear that identity as part of who we are, which means that we follow through with what we say we're going to do, even when nobody knows, because it becomes a
and if it's hard, I'm sorry, I interrupted you, please.
No, keep going.
I was just going to say, a lot of people, what I used to do is I used to get mad at myself. I'd have a plan and a schedule. I'm going to do this and this and this. And as soon as I fell off of it, I would feel behind the eight ball. Joy and I used to give it a name. We called it the eight ball syndrome. I would be mad all day and frustrated and angry because I was behind and I didn't do it. And I have to somehow make up and work extra hard and stay up late and get no sleep and then pile it onto tomorrow's list and then feel crappy all week long. And the answer is no, you don't. Shrink the goal. Win.
Yes.
And then win again.
And that's something so simple. And it's like when we continue to live in joy, which is when we can accomplish and celebrate small things, it's going to just make our energetic level higher. It's going to help us to give us the momentum to keep going. You're so right. And I think that it's amazing that you bring up what's going to happen when you get to a point where you feel like you can't follow through. That's amazing. What other steps haven't we discussed?
Oh, there's a million. But number one, make a firm decision. Number two, make a goal small enough that you can start the cadence of success. I said it. I did it. I said it. I did it. Like literally chant that. I said it. I did it. I said it. I did it. And do enough of those so that that becomes who you are and you're not pretending. You know, this imposter syndrome that you talked about earlier is real. I mean, it comes from not lack of integrity in ourselves. Somebody else thinks this, or at least we think they do, and we think something else. And so there's a mismatch there. So get rid of that mismatch. Shrink your goals and do it. So a cadence of success. I said it. I did it. I said it. I did it is number two. And number three is get some help. I didn't do that. I lived from my late teens, mid teens to 52. With depression ruining my life, up and down, self-sabotage, in and out of rehab, in and out of relationships, make a ton of money, lose it, make a ton of money, waste it, back and forth, until I finally had the courage, not to make money and be a big dog, that was easy. I had the courage to be vulnerable and go get some help.
Yes.
To tell the truth. As a kid, I learned to be a pathological liar to protect myself. I didn't even know how to tell the truth. I remember saying to myself all the time, I can be anybody you like. Like a method actor, I can put on an alias and I can be that. And no one knows. And when the lights go out and I'm alone, I don't know who the frick I am.
Yeah, that's powerful. So that was three. What's four?
Make a decision, cadence of success. Number three is get some help. Oh, and number four is be compassionate to yourself. Mm. You have brought yourself with your choices and decisions where you are. Mm-hmm. And that's true even if you say, like I had this bad upbringing and all this violence and abuse and da-da-da-da-da, so it's not my fault. Okay. It is now my opportunity to choose what I do with that because I can't change the past. So what is, and I have a choice right now to continue to allow those past things to have power over me, or I can declare my independence today and figure out how to get the help, love myself, forgive myself for mistakes I made. That used to kill me. I felt like I told you, I had 10 kids, and some of them today, after three divorces and in set rehab stuff, I have kids of mine today that won't talk to me. I have a lot of work to do there, and that used to destroy me. I hated myself, misery. And the answer is, all that attitude did is make me useless as far as talking on this podcast or writing books or helping other people. It made me a useless pile of blubbering garbage and self-pity, recrimination, lack of forgiveness and anger. And I was useless. And I was thinking I had to wait until somebody, them or somebody else, did something that would then free me to go X. Nonsense.
Yes.
Nonsense. Forgive yourself today, here, now. Yes, maybe you need to make amends if you've done any 12-step recovery and maybe nobody's been that bad. But if you've done any of that stuff, making amends is part of it. But yeah. You can't hang your happiness and your ability to love and serve on somebody else's permission.
100%. That is powerful. And it's something that too many of us do. And we wait until... But you're making a difference and you've taken the life that you've been given and the second chance that you've been given, and you're trying to make a difference. And I love that you're not using any of the things that you've been through as excuses why not, and you're getting it done, which was, you know, the end of that book. And so I can't wait to hear number five. What was the fifth? What's the fifth step?
Let's see. Be compassionate with yourself was number four. Okay. And number five is just lean into life every day. Like every day, there's a reason the earth, our bodies and everything were created with this renewal, with sleep and with renewal. I mean, God could have created all this stuff any way he wanted. Yeah. And he chose that a third of our lives are spent in bed. So what? God is stupid? No. It's intentional. It is a renewal process. The seasons of the earth. Life is diurnal. It is a daily process. So create. I have a process, a 12-step process, and this has nothing to do with recovery. A 12-step process of creating each day. Yeah. Like take each day as a brand new piece of clay, because you can't do anything about yesterday anyway. And maybe one of the activities I have today is to clean up a mess from yesterday. Okay, fine, but that's still a today activity.
Right.
I have a mess. I got to clean it from yesterday. I don't like the way that ended. I'm going to take positive, affirmative, I call it DCM, direct, consistent, motivated action to do something about that. Fine. But that's not living in the swirling sewer of yesterday's misery. It is intentional positive action to clean up some mess from yesterday. Okay, fine. But the number five is just keep going. Lean into every day. I have a morning ritual that's 2.5 to 3 hours long. People look at me and they say, I'd never do, I can't ever. The only reason you don't is because you don't know how powerful that is. I used to fight with it too. Can't be consistent. Can't do this, because I always felt like I had to fight it because somehow I didn't want to do it. Now, the morning ritual that I have is so powerful, I wouldn't dare face a day without it. It would be like running outside in Edmonton last week when it was minus 40 in the snow, naked. Like, you just don't do that. I wouldn't start my day without my ritual. Why? Because it feels so good.
Yeah. I feel like this, I could talk to you all day, and I want to be respectful of your time, but I do want to know, can you just give us a brief, like, what is it that you do in your morning routine? I'd love to know.
I use the acronym SPEM, spiritual, physical, emotional, mental. When I teach it to clients, I tell them to start with 40 minutes, 10 minutes spiritual, 10 minutes physical, 10 minutes emotional, which includes all of your relationships, and 10 minutes mental. For spiritual, it can be reading literature, it can be prayer, it can be meditation, but it is an intentional connection with the divine forces that we feel in all of us, the yearning to do more, be more, connect with the great universe, God, whatever you want to call it. I'm very spiritual, very connected, and I have experiences in my meditation that people would call enlightenment, and I don't even start my day unless I do.
Yeah.
But that's something I've developed over years. So that's S, and you do it whatever form works. But here's the key. You find something that works. So some people say, well, I meditate, and I'm sitting in meditation and a nap, and blah, 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 it's a boring crap. Find something that works for you.
Yeah.
P is physical. You may be going to go work out, play tennis, jump up and down, or dance later. I don't care. Wake up the container, the precious body that you have that is the vessel of your activity. So I've done martial arts for many years. I hold a couple of second degree black belts and used to do competition stuff. So I do martial arts stretches, but I don't care. Yoga, floor ex, planks, back bend, whatever. Just wake up this container and honor this body for 10 minutes. E is emotional. Intentionally think of three or four people that you choose to love. Maybe you need to make a repair attempt. Maybe you need to send a text to somebody. You know, before, in the days before social media, this would be a lot harder, because if you get up at 4:30 or 5 or 5:30 and you're making phone calls at 5:30 in the morning, maybe people don't want to hear from you. But with social media today, it's as easy as breathing. Pick some people. You want to nurture a relationship. You want to repair a relationship. And just love. Yeah. This is your opportunity to build and nurture through love and forgiveness. Practice these things. That's what E is. It's your emotional context and structure. M is mental. I have 30 books sitting around me. I do, literally 30 or more that I'm in the middle of. And I also, one of the courses I've learned and taught us how to read 10 times faster than you normally read, because I've learned how to do that. And that's a learnable skill too. It's not because I'm magic. One of the ones that came recently was a book by Jean Klein called I Am. He's a big proponent of non-duality. One of them is a book I just reread 4 or 5 times, The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. I got one. I shared a stage over the weekend with John Chen, who's an expert, massive dude at holding virtual meetings. He's done stuff with Damon John and the lady who wrote Eat, Pray, Love that Julia Roberts started. So I shared a stage with him this weekend, and I just bought his book like right now because he was so good. And I made friends with him. So this is good. I got another one that I got recently called Self-Discipline. Like, I'm in the middle of reading 30 books, and I might read half a book, or I might read a chapter. Whatever, but the purpose is to honor M. So spiritual, physical, emotional, mental, it's an arbitrary way to think about life. But what I know is when I do those things, I'm armed and dangerous
for the day. Similar morning routine. And I just, think that I'm off. My whole day is thrown off if something happens that I have to interrupt that. And so it's becomes a non-negotiable for me. I literally have enjoyed this time so much, and I want to respect your time, but boy, let's continue to keep in touch. I can absolutely see that this might be an opportunity for you to come back again and share more of your amazing knowledge, your wisdom, because you and I have a similar passion, which is helping people live out their divine purpose and not hold ourselves back from doing that. And I think that the two of us are on that path to helping other people live that out. And it starts with the decision to get unstuck. And so, guys, thanks for listening. Kellen, is there anything else that you wanted to say or a coaching question you want to ask the audience to think about until the next time that we can use before we part?
Well, three things. One, I want to honor you again for the work that you're doing, the passion that you have, and you're saying yes to the divine urges that are in you to discover, develop, and serve with your divine gifts. Thank you. Number two, if you want to talk to me or learn any more about me, one of the nice things about having a weird name like Kellen Flukiger is I'm really easy to find. If you Google me, there's thousands of hits from my executive career because it's a big deal. Amazon me, I've got books and music. I also own a recording studio. I've done all kinds of music. I was in a group that charted number one on Billboard, all kinds. So I'm really easy to find. If anybody wants to find anything or read anything, I couldn't find you is not true. So that's the second thing. Any way I can help you, if you want to reach out, my email's coachkellenflukiger@gmail.com. And the one catch for all of that stuff that I just said was really easy is you got to spell my name right. Okay.
Well,
or you can't find
everything
me.
Everything is in the show notes so that everybody has all the opportunities. We don't have to make them have to spell. So we can do that for them. So I'll make sure that everything's in the show notes.
Okay, cool. And the third and last thing is, look, if you live like you are where you are today, you're as rich or as poor, you're as healthy or as sick, you're as related in relationship or not. I'm just talking to a guy this morning who was, he's, you know, getting divorced. He's done everything he could to stay married and everything else. And his wife, scary. And I'm not going to repeat some of the things I said, but I'm just like, oh man, you know, you're a hero, but he is where he is.
Yeah.
And you are where you are. Money, health, relationships, job, career, passion, where you are. I don't care. I don't care what's before that, because whatever all that is, like, I love all my messes and disasters because it's turned me into the person that I am today. And I wouldn't trade me for anything. I got a lot of cleanup and work to do and everything else, but I'm happy to do it from who I am and not some other imaginary person that I don't know if would have existed anyway. But no matter where you've been or where you are today, it's never too late to get unstuck, to start moving, to lean into life, to love yourself, to make your stand, to make a choice, to claim your opportunity today.
I love that. Thank you so much for blessing us with everything that you've had to say. And I look forward to following your journey and checking out everything that you've put out there in the world. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Untucked Podcast. I'm so grateful to be on this journey with you. And don't forget to check out the show notes if you want to get into my private club, The Better Club, to be able to learn better ways to be better, do better, and have better. So until next time, keep showing up. Let's get unstuck together. Have a great day.